She's not here, Wally says, standing in the doorway, looking all offended. Like it's Artemis's fault that he had to come answer the door without a good reason or something. Well, so much for that plan. I can see that, genius, Artemis bites back. You'd never go out of your way to let somebody in unless there was no alternative. Well, you see, I don't exactly have that duty since this isn't my house. Wally smiles stiffly. His face changes, though, into a skeptical frown after a second. So, why are you still wearing your uniform 2 hours after school ended, exactly? A siren starts wailing in Artemis's head. Lie! 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 Is there a problem with thinking that the skirt shows off my legs in a casual after-school way? You are the worst at this, Artemis Croc. Go jump in front of a manure truck. Why are you wearing Millennium Falcon pajama pants? Wally glances down and lifts his legs slightly, as if he hadn't even noticed what he'd been wearing. Artemis bites her cheek to keep back a smile. Is there a problem with thinking that the Millennium Falcon shows off my legs? He riposts in a nasally, fake, raspy voice. Artemis wrinkles her nose. Ignoring that, she grumbles. How do you even get away with not wearing, like, a top hat and white tie around here? She knows that's more in the Wayne Manor vein of things, since she's pretty sure even Dick's goldfish has to wear little spats on his fins because Bruce Wayne is an anal freak and told their butler, Alfred, not to let her in once because of her Doc Martens. Especially because she came over once and Zatanna was literally just naked. Not that she wishes this would happen with Wally or anything, but that's a thing for the Zataras, apparently. Except for Mr. Zatara, who always wears an Italian tailored suit. So, okay, just Zatanna. But the point is, you can get away with wearing nothing in the Zatara house, which of course means you can get away with wearing anything, which would explain some of Wally's wardrobe choices. Naked Wally, focus! Kind of keeps me grounded, he replies honestly. This place has a decor receipt that'd knock your eyes out, so I try to slack around once in a while to balance it out. Is that why answering the door is like going to Mordor for you? Artemis sneers. I mean, slacking off sounds like it needs a tight schedule. Nah, Wally says with a shrug, staring down at the rug. It's just not my house. Door answering isn't on my list of contribution chores. Plus, it's huge, and the navigation is so not worth it. I'm used to, you know, nice single-story two-bedroom places. With barns. As he'd gone on, his voice had gotten significantly less bristled. Artemis stares at him. She hadn't really thought about that, but now that he mentions it, it makes sense. Of course Wally would be intimidated by Zatanna's stupidly enormous mansion, considering the fact that he's a normal person. She knows that feeling. The first few times she'd been invited over to Zatanna's, she'd brought a ball of yarn to string behind her just in case. Well, she tells him, in a voice that's a little more stammery than her usual fare, and she really doesn't know why these words are coming out of her mouth. If, you know, basking in the presence of such grandeur ever gets too overwhelming or whatever. My place is pretty low-key. And there's a takeout place, like, right next door. Why did she say that? Oh, God. He gives her a funny look, sort of halfway between being pleasantly surprised and dangerously close to a stroke. She knows she got him with the takeout bait, though. You had me a takeout. He grins, wide and genuine, making his freckles spray up. And Artemis's stomach does something worrisomely close to somersaulting. Do you want to come in? He starts to step aside a little to give her room. She can't tell if he sounds pained or not. Maybe just unsure, for some reason. No, thanks, actually, she says after a second. If Z's not here, I should probably, you know, do my homework somewhere. Like here, he says simply. She has to physically force her jaw not to drop open. Wally West? Asking her if she wants to spend time in his company? Without it being a precursor to some kind of long and involved sarcastic joke? Is she surprised she doesn't keel over right there on the doorstep? Like in a library, she wants to retort. But instead, she hears a lighter version of her voice flutter back a simple, okay. Something twitches across his face that closely resembles happiness, and he shuffles out of the way, bowing with a flourish and an extended arm. Artemis snorts and strides past him. You know, actually, he says, about a second after she stepped inside. Takeout might complement brain straining perfectly. What do you say? You, me, cheap pot stickers? He moves to lean against the wall, but he's too far away from it, so he sort of loses his balance and stumbles. Do not ever tell anyone this. Ever. But for some reason, the noise that comes out of Artemis's nose is a giggle. Even Wally has the decency to look dumbfounded. She tries to push it out of focus by shrugging nonchalantly and tilting her mouth, looking skyward. Sounds about the same as cutting my retina, she says airily, but sure, that's still better than chemistry. Wally looks puzzled, but amused. He's still having trouble with chem? I don't think not having trouble with chem is exactly in my future. Maybe you need a dash of the wellman's expert help, Wally drawls, rocking on the balls of his feet and grinning and... Oh man, he has been spending way too much time around Dick. Like I need a lobotomy, Artemis retorts without missing a beat. Wally winces. Well, tutoring would probably be way more affordable, he quips. You didn't RSVP to my invitation. What invitation? Artemis asks, narrowing her eyes. Just now, he says with an easy shrug. For takeout. And watching you embarrass yourself trying to decode the periodic table. Come on, seriously. If you buy me lunch, I'll help you with your homework and give you an hour's pleasure of my company. Pretty sweet deal, since normally my rates are a month's worth of groceries. Artemis blinks at him, feeling her brow furrow. For all his constantly put-on insouciance, SAT vocab, he looks kind of hopeful. Like if she says no, he'll dare to lose the light in his eyes or something. No, come on. That's stupid. This is Wally. The only thing that would rob the light from his eyes would be if she miraculously survived a bear attack. I feel like if I leave you alone in this place much longer, you might stumble onto their secret torture dungeon. So it's probably best you leave before you start catching on, she finally tells him wryly. She drops the jocular front, pointing a finger at him. But trust me, I know how much food you can consume on a good day, so one lunch will count for two chem help sessions. Capiche? Wally rolls his eyes, already picking his slumped backpack up off the floor in the hallway. You sure drive a hard bargain, he sighs, but he's smiling. And it is the least okay smile in the history of diabolically cute redheads with slightly uneven teeth and too many freckles. And it is really unfair that he's as annoying as he is, because he is really cute. God, oh, she hates this. Well, it's official. Wally is never going to come over again, because Mr. Mala almost gunned him down. Wally Best.
That was the single most terrifying moment of my life.
Smartimus.
Dude, he's completely harmless. You're not dying, are you?
Wally Best.
No, but I'm reeling in trauma, and that's pretty bad too.
Smartimus.
You're such a baby.
Wally Best.
Whatever.
Wally Best.
So, hey, barring the homicidal maniac who lives three doors down from you.
Wally Best.
Why have you been acting so weird lately?
Smartimus.
What?
Wally Best.
You heard me.
Wally Best.
Read me.
Wally Best.
The point is, you understand.
Smartimus.
I'm not acting weird. Everything's perfectly fine.
Wally Best.
Perfectly fine, huh?
Wally Best.
I get that I've only known you for about 2 months, but it is really obvious when something's bothering you. So, hey, if you want to talk.
Wally Best.
Hire a shrink.
Smartimus.
Har, har.
Smartimus.
Is typing.
Wally Best.
Hmm?
Smartimus.
Never mind, I gotta go.
Smartimus.
Sorry you almost got shot.
Smartimus.
Went offline.
Wally Best.
No, I had a good... Okay, bye. During Artemis's oral quiz that Thursday, she guesses it's oral because Oliver wants to test her diction. Oliver goes from asking her about religious oligarchies to asking her what would be the appropriate response to having a guy profess his love to her. She has to laugh for about 5 minutes, and she can tell by the way Oliver's goatee bristles that he's docking points for her lack of composure under duress.
Thank you,
she answers primly. You are very kind. Dinah snorts so loudly that it startles Arsenal. Good grief, no, Oliver exclaims, but Artemis can tell he's trying not to chuckle.
Victory!
Have you ever actually pulled that on anyone?
Artemis laughs some more.
Yeah, one time a guy actually saw me as something besides a threat to his survival and things escalated. She snarks back.
Duh, no, Uncle Ollie. I've never had a guy profess his undying love to me.
You're missing out, Dinah says, with a pointed look at Oliver. Okay, gross. We ought to fix this straight away, Oliver booms, slapping his palm onto the table and rattling the china tea set. Arsenal starts stress-gnawing on his leg. Dinah, what's our status on suitors?
Dinah opens her mouth to answer, but Artemis has already said no.
Then, louder, no! For your homework, Oliver declares with a determined look. I want you to research international bachelors. No!
Hold that thought, Dinah interjects, patting Oliver on the shoulder before looking back to Artemis.
How about this? You make a list of your 5 most ideal consorts.
How about this? Artemis retorts snidely. We change the stupidly outdated rules of the Vlatavan government so that anyone can rule without being married.
Because, yeah, that's a thing. Queens can be in charge around Vlatava, but they have to be married. They can only be queen if there are no other married males in the family. Which, okay, that's fair. At least kings don't get any extra privileges. But really, required marriage is dumb anyway. And that's pretty unfair in Artemis's opinion, because the Vlatavan royal family could have a totally capable queen who never got a chance to shine because her politically inept younger brother got married first. That's why there's so much pressure on Oliver. Because he's the first unmarried king, and he is kind of starting to outstay his legroom. We can discuss that at a later date, Dinah says. For now, that's your homework. Bring it in tomorrow. Artemis falls back on the chaise lounge and groans loudly, so that Arsenal starts quivering and looks around wildly, crouching down onto the Persian rug and growling at a dust bunny. Artemis Croc's list of top 5 ideal consorts, in no particular order. Composed October 13th. 1. Water polo MVP Cal Durham. Not that she'd ever want to take him away from Tula or anything, because they're majorly in love, and as long as Cal's happy, she's happy. But he would look really great in a crown. Ooh, and she could show him up at balls and stuff. He'd also probably notice her existence. That would be a plus. 2. James Bond. No, Artemis doesn't care if he's not real. That's just what the British Secret Service wants you to think. And can you imagine? She'd be a princess and a secret agent on the side? Not that her chances of survival would be great, being involved with James Bond, but screw that. Artemis is sick of all the hot ladies dying in James Bond's world, so she'll just be the first one to survive. Besides that, redhead and diamonds are forever. 3. Dick Grayson. He could probably hack something so she wouldn't have to be a princess. That is the only reason he's on here. 4. Tommy Shepard, aka Speed. He'd at least be able to make things interesting, and he'd probably offend so many people that she and he would be ostracized from the royal family, and then he could scoop her up and speed her off somewhere far, far away from all of her problems. She stopped reading Young Avengers after Tommy left. What's the point? Okay, that's a lie. She still reads it because, hello, K-A-T-E. 5. She can't think of any more, so whatever. Wally West can have the honor of being on here, even though she would never, ever want to have him as a consort or have him anywhere near her or run a country with him. She wouldn't be able to pay attention to anything government-related. Not because he's, like, nice looking or anything, but because he'd never leave her alone, because he's annoying and a jerk. She hates Wally so much. She rescinds his position on this list and replaces him with 6. Luke Skywalker. Okay, this isn't going on the list, so Oliver won't see it, but having Wally for a consort probably wouldn't be so bad. He has all those freckles on his nose and shoulders and toes. She totally saw them on his toes at Zatanna's when she'd gone over to swim after school on Friday, and she almost died. And he's smart, and he makes her laugh. And she'd need that in this stuffy world of Vlatavan political dinners. Plus, she doesn't think Wally would make fun of her for wearing some froofy dress. Okay, he probably would. But since he's Wally and he's wholesome, he'd probably at least tell her she looked nice, and she'd rather be told she looks nice than beautiful or gorgeous or anything, because nice is about as good as it's ever gonna get for her while still being sincere. And as far as sincerity goes, Wally West should have a gold medal. The point is, this is majorly weird, but yeah, Wally might be okay. New text message from Rudolph. Found my Star Wars DVDs. You down for a marathon tonight? So I can prove Han Solo is the best character, I mean. And so I won't have to go through the pain of having to watch you act like an expert when you only saw episode 4. New text message from Rudolph. Your place? Make out? New text message from Rudolph. Fuck! Take out. Autocorrect.
Sent text message to Rudolph.
This isn't a date, is it? It sounds suspiciously like a date. I don't know if I can trust you.
New text message from Rudolph.
It could not be further from a date, to be honest. Gross.
New text message from Rudolph.
Unless you want it to be a date.
Artemis has gotten a lot of weird texts. Come on, both Zatanna Zatara and Dick Grayson have her number. And then there's that weird blocked number that always texts her things like, hello, and don't look behind you. She can count on one hand the number of times she's gotten one that's actually tripped up her razor-sharp off-the-cuff wit. She can count on one finger the number of times she's gotten one that she has been totally unable to respond to. That last one from Wally? That's the finger. It doesn't change the fact that on Friday night, she finds herself in Wally's room while Zatanna practices the importance of being earnest lines in the kitchen, splitting an M&M pizza with him and dissing Han Solo just to piss him off like it's the easiest thing in the world. And suddenly, this is happening. She and Wally are sharing bowls of popcorn and laughing at the same things, and there's not a single thing about it that feels weird. But, like, that's the thing about Wally. Everything in her life is such a total tempest of confusion and uncertainty right now. Except for him. Even though she's barely known him a month and a half. Miraculously, even though he's the fastest moving person she knows, he's the only one who can make everything around her stand still. And get her to try M&M pizza, but whatever. That's a thing for him, apparently. It's so much better than it sounds. So, Artemis, her mother says slyly, no doubt hiding her evil smirk behind her primly held cup of tea. I have noticed that you've been spending a great deal of time with, what is it, Wally West? Artemis chokes violently on her muffin. Her head almost explodes with a burst of colorful expletives that her mom would probably disown her just for knowing. But all that manages to come out of her mouth is... Who? What? Why? Wally. No! Ew! Wally! I hate Wally. Sometimes. He's a jerk. A jerk with nice shoulders. Why do you care? What have you even seen? Has Zatanna been telling you lies? Because that's what they are. They're lies. I just... No. That's gross. Because it's true. I'm gonna miss my bus. It's raining. Did you know the Voltavan economy is finally on the up and up? Crazy! Love you. Bye! She yanks her bag up and sprints for the door. And the worst part is that her mom doesn't call for her to come back or slow down or anything. Which can only mean she's sitting there, smiling diabolically, and getting all the wrong ideas. This is bad. This is very, very bad. Artemis hasn't really been giving you detailed looks into her life lately, and she's sorry about that. But princess lessons wear her out. The semester is sprinting past her and sticking its tongue out, and suddenly, it's homecoming week. Her D's in chemistry have been going down. Or, well, up. Since she started studying at Zatanna's house on the weekends. Mostly because Wally is freakishly smart. Did you know? He could do all of her homework in his sleep with amnesia if he wanted to. No wonder he's in AP Physics. Roquette must love him. Artemis has never been so lucky. The point is, she's been getting C pluses and even B minuses. Thanks to Wally's Mojo Jojo brain and mnemonic devices and weird cravings that are surprisingly conducive to a good memory. Artemis won't be able to look at macaroni and grilled cheese sandwiches ever again without thinking of stoichiometry. Her mom's totally thrilled about it,
Like it's a big deal for Artemis to be getting good grades on something. Please, she's been acing French tests since the 7th grade. In English, they finish Of Mice and Men, and while they all discuss the ending, Connor Kent leaves the classroom and doesn't come back. Artemis catches Megan Morse glancing periodically at the door with a worried crinkle between her eyebrows about every 2 minutes until the bell rings. It's weird, you know? Having high school continue so normally when she's spending 2 hours every weekday learning what to do if her country has a drought, or if a terrorist coalition takes her hostage, or if she has to set a table for a royal banquet and can't remember which spoon goes where, or if Arsenal starts having one of his Pomeranian rage fits and she has to protect as many velvet cushions as possible. And what's especially weird is that nobody really knows about how Vlatov and Taylors are working on fitting the coronation police to exactly her size. Or how she now has almost every step to a Vlatovan waltz down. But maybe that's more nice than it is weird. Than it is surreal. Because they're still treating her like she's normal. And for that, she's grateful. Even though normal means Billy Hayes scrawls freak onto her locker in black Sharpie. Like, thank God! She still has the capacity to be a freak! And between you and her, she'd rather be a freak than a monarch. Now that the school year's in full swing and teachers have stopped going easy on everyone, homework-wise, Artemis has been spending every weekend and almost every spare evening studying at Zatanna's. Wally helps her with chemistry, she helps him with French, Zatanna helps Dick with World Civ, and no one helps Zatanna with anything. Except for stats, which she and Wally have together, so they compare notes a lot. And when Artemis says, compare notes, she means the real way. Not the way that Dick means when he says, let's compare notes, aka, let me look at your notes and steal all of them. Paula's been really cool about the time suck, so long as Artemis promises her about 7 times a night that she's not pushing herself too hard. Cal Durham's butt, cheekbones, and shoulders are still all perfect. And to top it all off, her lessons actually get kind of fun. Even though Oliver's super embarrassing most of the time, and even though he can get a little too Vlatovan pride on her, he's really easy to get along with, and he kind of gets her. Not in the same way Dinah does, where she feels like she could talk to him about anything, but in the sense that she feels like he's actually teaching her things the ways he knows will work for her. And in the sense that he sees a little of himself in her and wants to help make sure she's the best she can be. He really is like a mentor. In the sense that she can make fun of him 24/7 and still feel like earning a warm good job from him is one of the most amazing things she can accomplish. You should see the way he does archery. Wow. He's mind-blowing. You'd think that being retired from the sport after the whole cancer thing would sort of chip away at his talent. But every tug and release of the bowstring is smooth as butter. And even though Artemis almost always hits her target, natural skill, Oliver tells her proudly, she doesn't do it nearly as flawlessly as he does. Still though, Wednesdays are her favorite days for lessons. Especially as it gets rainier and she has to aim properly through downpours, and she and Oliver go traipsing back into the villa with chattering teeth and excited babbling about each other's techniques, and Dinah gives them both sipping chocolate. They start their cooking and baking lessons the week of October 24th, and Artemis gets flour everywhere and burns basically everything. And the tip of Oliver's goatee catches on fire, but he still booms out a jovial laugh and claps her on the back and tells her it's the most fun he's had in years. And in the meantime, self-defense lessons with Dinah are hardcore. Artemis totally knows how to kick people in the face now, while wearing high heels. Which, by the way, she never thought would make her feel as fierce and unstoppable as they do. It's amazing. It's perfectly possible to be in touch with your daintiness and femininity while still retaining the ability to crush your oppressors, Dinah tells her, with a gleam in her eye, as they do a practice headlock on a dummy. Sorry, opponents, attackers, enemies. Artemis has a feeling that Dinah had been forced to deal with one too many pompous assholes in combat training schools. Assholes who were dumb enough to say things like, "You fight like a girl," and "I'm not gonna get beaten by a blonde," and "Sure, sweets, blow me away." Not that she's complaining. Dinah may be terrifying, but now she's teaching Artemis how to be terrifying, so it all works out. Seriously, though, these lessons aren't nearly as bad as she thought they'd be. Don't tell anybody this, but lately, she's been walking just a little bit faster to Oliver's villa every day after school. She even jaywalked. It's kind of easy to forget about her friends when she's having this much of her free time siphoned away from her, but Zatanna doesn't let her slack off for long. The four of them, Artemis, Zatanna, Dick, and Wally, all wind up spending more nights at her house than they ever plan to. And whenever Artemis starts to pass her 24-hour grace period of no texts or calls, Zatanna starts IMing her incessantly and leaving her goofy voicemails until she caves and responds. It's nice, though, knowing that Zatanna cares. Knowing that Zatanna still wants her around, even though she's been a total flummoxing flake since September. Knowing that Oliver's proud of her progress. Knowing that Dinah's proud of her left hook. Knowing that Wally wants to watch Star Wars with her. Knowing that... Wait. That's right. Star Wars. So, apparently Han Solo and Princess Leia end up together. That's a thing. That's why Zatanna had laughed so evilly on the phone. Whatever. Artemis and Wally are no Leia and Han, even though he fits the exact bill of what she assumes a nerf herder is. Even though she convinced Oliver to let her try Cinnabons during their mini-lessons on hair management. Even though she fell asleep during the credits of Return of the Jedi with her head in Wally's lap. And even though he didn't try to wake her up until after Dick had gotten a picture. Laser brain. She's supposed to be concentrating on lifting her barbell right now. It's weight room day, Thursday in PE, but her mind's pretty much elsewhere. Mostly on the visual of Oliver trying to teach her a prim princess walk the evening before by showing her how it was done himself. "What are you grinning about?" Wally asks from above her. She scowls. He's her partner and spotter for the day. "Thanks, Miss Thal." He grins complacently and flexes. "It must be the view." In his dreams, even though his jawline looks way, way nicer from down here, and she can sort of see up his shirt, and he has abs and freckles around his belly button and what looks like an orange happy trail that she definitely shouldn't be noticing. "I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain," she huffs out, pushing the weight up and slackening back again. 7. They each need to do 15 before Ms. Thal blows the rotation whistle. He snickers. She has a sudden vision of him leaning down far enough that she can kiss his throat, and quickly dispels it with her memorized image of Cal Durham's pectorals. Thank you, water polo meet she accidentally walked in on while looking for the girls' locker room last year. "Hey, Artemis," Wally says. Artemis makes a short grunting noise as she finishes her 9th. "Yeah? Do you dance as well as you lift?" he asks. Artemis pushes up. 10. Because even if you do, I wouldn't mind having a date to homecoming. Artemis drops the weight. Seconds before it's about to hit her right in the jugular and probably kill her, Wally curses and surges down and manages to stop it. Straining, he grits his teeth and lifts it and sets it back onto the stand over Artemis's chest with a clang. When Artemis's heart has miraculously started beating again, and when everyone in the class has stopped staring over at them and gone back to torturing themselves physically, she rears her head back and gapes upside down at Wally, who gazes back at her owlishly. "What?" she chokes out, clutching her chest. He looks like he's physically fighting his instinct to deflate. "You," he replies, swinging his arms back and forth. His ears are turning red. "Me? Dance. I just thought we could, I just thought." He nods, as though the matter is settled. "I thought. And now here we are." Artemis flounders. He gulps, and his Adam's apple bobs, and he shakes his head like he's trying to shoo off an annoying bug before plastering on his patented wallman lady-killing smirk, self-named. "Opportunity of a lifetime, babe." She liked him better when his ears had been red. She closes her mouth and sets her jaw, reaching for the barbell again. Wally lifts a hand hesitantly, hovering over it. But she shoots him a glare because how dare he assume she needs his help? And he drops it again. She lifts, her arms burning. 11. "Did Megan turn you down or something?" she asks snidely, along with every other girl within a 2-state radius. Because that is the only explanation why Wally West would ever ask her to a high school dance. A night of mocking her unawareness of the Star Wars franchise is one thing. A night of wearing a suit and slow dancing with her in a dimly lit place is another. 12. 1. 2. 13. 1. 2. Wally is silent for too long for her to be comfortable. After she finishes her 14th, she braces the barbell over her chest and cranes her neck to regard him. In the split second before he notices that she's looking at him, the expression on his face sends a jolt of something unidentifiable but definitely painful through her heart and straight down her ribs, ricocheting off every part of her that hurts. His eyes are half-lidded, and his mouth is downturned in dejection, and his jaw is tight, and his shoulders are loose. 14? 1, 2. It's not the kind of look she'd ever expected to see on Wally's face, which she's come to recognize as carefree and predictable and goofy and excited and flexible enough to accommodate triple-decker cheeseburgers. It's gone in an instant, though, and she starts to wonder if she'd been temporarily delusional in thinking she'd just seen everything inside of him go dull at her evasive jab. But then he's rolling his eyes and blowing his hair out of his face. "Jeez, sorry for bestowing you with the biggest honor in Gotham City," he drawls, stretching. He links his arms behind his head and stares apathetically at the ceiling, but his lower lip is protruding just slightly. "Forget it. I was just messing with you." Artemis groans. "Wally, if you're going to ask me, can you just do it for real instead of trying to make it into some big show?" To punctuate her point, she heaves the weight up one last time, holding it in the air for a moment longer than she should. She keeps her eyes trained on the metal bar. "So, Artemis," she hears him say in his ordinary voice, the one she's only ever really heard him use around her, when it's just them and Obi-Wan in a tub of moose tracks and a rainstorm outside. "And when did this happen? And how did this happen? How did she wind up knowing him so well? Knowing what every infuriating inflection means?" "Do you want to go to homecoming with me?" She slackens again and exhales. 15. Yes, she says. And when her eyes dart back to meet his, she's smiling. Quickly, to save herself, she adds, I'm in a commiserating mood anyway. You know what? Wally replies, taking the weight out of her hands and setting it on the rack. He leans forward, his back curving, until his face is only a few inches above hers, his hands braced on the bar. Artemis opens and closes her mouth wordlessly, her eyes catching on two dark freckles just at the corner of his right eye. That's good enough for me, babe. Ass? Bacon, she reminds him, but her voice comes out much feebler than she'd planned. Course, he breathes back, tilting his head and smirking. His breath has barely finished skirting over her forehead before he's sprung back on his feet and Miss Thal has blown the whistle. Artemis's knees are definitely not wobbling when she stands up. After class ends, and Wally and Dick go straggling off to the boys' locker room, Zatanna appears out of nowhere and yanks Artemis by the shirt sleeve to the outer side of the building, pinning her to the wall in a matter of seconds. What? She demands, grinning with fiendish glee. The hell was that, girl? Artemis replies dazedly, her eyes fixed without focus on some point over Zatanna's shoulder. I think I just got a date to homecoming? And smelled your cousin's breath mints? Can you tell me how dances work, please? Zatanna squeals and dances up and down, clasping Artemis's wrists and distracting the tennis players enough that they all get hit in the face with tennis balls at roughly the same time. Zatanna, still gripping Artemis's wrist, lifts it into the air in some kind of victory pump and screams at the top of her lungs, She's got a date to homecoming! My human tragedy of a best friend got a date! You hear that, Gotham Academy? Nothing is impossible! Note to self. Never tell Zatanna anything. Ever. Again. New text message. From Z. I'm so proud of you. I might literally be crying. Sent text message to Z. What year is it? New text message from Grayson. There can be miracles when you believe. New text message from unknown number. I can see you, but you can't see me. Edit contact. Rudolph. Change contact's name? Yes. Enter new contact's name. Wally. Wally, okay? Yes. Contact name successfully changed. He what? Oliver exclaims. Nice job, Artemis. You and your big mouth. Asked her to a dance, Ollie, Dinah replies for Artemis, which is good, considering she's still kind of catatonic. Weren't you listening? I've never heard this fellow's name before, Oliver grumbles, stroking his goatee. I need a file, Dinah. Get me a file. I don't think we have one, Your Majesty, Dinah says flatly. Then write one, Oliver commands, slapping his knee. Arsenal puffs up and jumps. We need to make sure he's not some undercover agent or a... He snaps his fingers. A felon! He's from Kansas, Artemis deadpans. Oliver frowns, looking bewildered. But then he says, with a tone of comprehension, Oh! Dinah rolls her eyes and shakes her head, half exasperation and half fond resignation. I think it's terrific news, Artemis. It is, Artemis says weakly.
Wait a minute,
Oliver interjects, narrowing his eyes.
West, wasn't he on your list of consorts?
Artemis had not previously known it was possible for the human body to enter a state of rigor mortis while still alive. And so quickly, too.
No,
she barks back.
But no, I replaced him with Luke Skywalker.
Oliver and Dinah exchange one of their covert looks. Artemis hates covert looks, especially coming from them. Well, Dinah says, all briskly, before Artemis can suspiciously inquire about the meaning of the CL. We were going to do paparazzi management today, right? Let's do that.
Yes, let's, Artemis grinds back, glowering.
The trick, Dinah explains, standing and setting down her PDA, is in the gestures. Smoothly, classily, she swings up her right hand and flicks up her middle finger. Oliver looks simultaneously scandalized and weirdly adoring. Artemis shudders. They can't publish any photos if you're doing this in them, Dinah continues, lowering her hand. It goes against their censorship laws. So, when in doubt, she winks. All it takes is a single finger. Now, these are the kinds of lessons Artemis doesn't mind learning. She literally gets to practice her middle finger form for, like, 45 minutes. This is the life. The sun comes up on Tuesday and illuminates the rain-slicked sidewalks with white. Artemis actually manages to catch her bus on time and doesn't get stuck sitting next to Billy Batson. She... get this, scores a window seat next to Cal Durham. Cal Durham, who is crying? Artemis punches her jaw closed before it can drop fully open. Her brain starts scrambling around in a panic. Say something! Are you, she hears her voice inquire at an octave too high. Is everything hunky-dory? Okay, I mean, are you okay? Artemis Croc, there was no reason for you to ever be born. Cal gives a little bit of a start, probably because he hadn't noticed she'd been sitting there before he'd lowered himself onto the leather gum-stained seat, and looks over with an astonished look on his face. She smiles stupidly at him, even though his eyes are all red and there are bags under them. Are you? She asks again. Much gentler this time, thank God, even though she knows it's totally none of her business, and she'd always pictured her first conversation with Cal Durham to involve a little less stammering and crying and a little more date acquiring. He blinks at her, looking torn. And suddenly, Artemis doesn't really have much of a desire to make out with him or stare at choice areas of his posterior. She just wants to do everything she can to get that tragic look out of his eyes. He shakes his head and looks at his hands in his lap, tracing the lines on his palm. I do not think so. Artemis doesn't press him, but she keeps her eyes on him to show that she's still listening if he needs her to. He sighs, his shoulders slumping, and leans back against the back of the bus seat. I believe that the love of my life has just... he shrugs. Broken up with me.
God! Sure put the nail in that coffin! her loss, Artemis says, before she can stop herself. Kel's eyes dart up in surprise, and Artemis flushes against her will, waving a hand and looking out the window to try to save some dignity.
Thank you,
Kel murmurs after a while, like he wishes he had something more substantial to tell her. Artemis lifts her shoulders as nonchalantly as she can, but she can see her wide smile reflected in the glass of the window. New text message from Z. Frankly, I'm astonished I managed to go all day without projectile vomiting. Constantly having to see you and Wally go all quiet and smile at each other, I mean. Artemis is halfway through typing a sardonic and dismissive and denying reply as she marches down the sidewalk after school ends, when she crashes headlong into someone. Someone who squeaks. Literally headlong, by the way. Artemis's forehead cracks right into another one, yanking a foul expletive out of her at just a few decibels too high of a volume. She leaps back, one hand flying to the spot where she's sure her skull just split in half, and wrenches one eye open to survey the damage. Megan Morse is standing opposite her, in exactly the same pose, her teeth gritted. Artemis flummoxes, and then mentally kicks herself for the
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Are you okay?
Megan prods unsurely at her forehead and winces, but when her eyes meet Artemis's, she gives her a wobbly and forgiving smile.
I'm fine, she replies politely. Are you okay?
Sure, just some residual brain damage, Artemis riposts facetiously. Megan blinks protuberantly at her, starting to look increasingly worried, and starts to open her mouth apologetically. Artemis, catching on, rapidly shakes her head and waves a hand.
No, I'm joking, she assures her hastily. Joke, that was a joke, I'm fine.
Megan listens in obvious relief and blows out a sigh, smiling happily back at Artemis again in no time.
Don't I have PE and English with you? She asks, perking up. You're the one who's always arguing with Wally, right?
It's like a piano falling onto Artemis from 20 stories up. All at once, she remembers that this is the girl who Wally regularly calls Megalicious, and Sweet Cheeks, and Sugar, and who he regularly stares at for long periods of time with a disgustingly sappy look in his eyes.
Or, well, used to.
He's kind of been cutting back on it since Artemis agreed to watch Star Wars with him. Megan probably beat him up. She hopes so.
Yeah, Artemis affirms rigidly.
Megan giggles.
You two are funny.
Her voice is bubbly and warm, like carbonated hot chocolate? Something. Something less gross. Trust Artemis. Megan's voice is adorable. And he's sweet. A little weird sometimes, but sweet.
Sometimes, Artemis snorts.
Yeah, he's a lady killer, all right, she mutters. Unable to keep the acrid tone out of her voice, but Megan doesn't seem to notice. Anyway, I should probably go.
Oh, you're going the same way I am, Megan says cheerfully.
My bodyguard's waiting for me at the corner. We can walk together. Artemis blinks at her, feeling a prod of something in her chest that's sort of like pity and sort of like understanding. Megan's beaming at her with such rampant hopefulness in her brown eyes, like she'd give anything just to have someone to talk to, someone to be friends with. Artemis has learned from Dickens' Etana that Megan doesn't have many friends. She and Cal hang out a lot, but that makes sense, because Cal famously hangs out with the underdogs, But despite Megan's friendly disposition and acute fashion sense, an incredibly pretty face and natural sociability, the fact that she has a bodyguard who follows her to school and had spent most of her life being shut away by her parents before moving to Gotham to live with her uncle has kind of closed her off to the social interaction scene, especially at a school as stuck-up and elitist as Gotham Academy can be. So Artemis smiles at her and nods, and Megan does this little bounce like Artemis just promised she'd buy her Paris for Christmas, and falls into step beside her as the both of them head down the rest of the sidewalk. "So what part of town are you from?" Megan asks excitedly. "What's your favorite movie? Your hair is so pretty. I bet it's so much fun to play around with. I'm super jealous. What TV shows do you watch? Where do you want to go to college? Do you like wolves? I like wolves. Who do you have for homeroom?"
Whoa, slow down, Artemis exclaims. But there's something both kind of endearing and kind of sad about Megan's extremely blatant joy at having someone to have something as simple as a conversation with.
"We've still got another 5 yards. We can take this one question at a time."
"Sorry," Megan grimaces, tucking some hair behind her ear. "It's just nice to have someone to talk to. I don't know many people, you see. I only just moved here."
"I know," Artemis says, before she can stop herself. And Megan looks up, surprised. "I mean, you know, news travels more far than fast around here."
"Of course," Megan says, with a tiny laugh. She links her hands behind her arms.
So her face suddenly turns pink, and she ducks her head so that her bangs hide her eyes. "You know Connor Kent, right?" Artemis almost trips. She knows that kind of tone. That's the tone that she herself had used on Zatanna the year previously, except in reference to Cal Durham and his amazing shoulders.
"Kind of," she manages to reply. "I mean, not really. I've had detention with him a couple of times. Why?"
Megan slows her walk. Artemis looks ahead to find that they're coming to the end of the sidewalk, where they'll round the corner and Megan's bodyguard will no doubt be standing dutifully to whisk her off into a limo with tinted plexiglass windows.
"Just curious," she squeaks a little too quickly.
"Curious about whether he keeps his shirt on during mile days?" Artemis smirks, and Megan makes a keening noise.
Connor isn't in their PE class. He has its 6th period, but Artemis has gone by the track once or twice on her way to the bathroom, and she definitely knows the answer to that question.
Because I can tell you that, no, he doesn't.
When she looks over at Megan, she has to bite back a laugh. The girl's lightly freckled face is a bright shade of scarlet.
"Relax, Megan," Artemis teases her. "Winter uniform weather isn't gonna last forever."
Megan gives a start, her head whipping around.
"You..." Her face splits into a smile. "You know my name?"
"Oh, honey."
"Yeah," Artemis replies. "I promise I'm not, like, a total stalker. It's just..."
But the warm, almost teary smile on Megan's face assures her that she has nothing to worry about. They're around the corner in tandem, and Artemis is about to make a crack about what Zatanna calls Connor's resting face, which is this creepy look he gets when he's zoning out that makes him look like he's scanning a room for people to murder. But then she looks up at the street ahead of them, and the sentence dies in her throat. And it's not at the sight of the man she recognizes as Megan's bodyguard, either. And it's not at the fact that he has a gun on his belt. And it's not at the fact that he's standing next to a black limousine. It's the fact that he's idly chatting about what sounds like the best method to tear gas someone with Dinah? Artemis squawks.
Diana blinks as though mildly surprised and turns to face her. She's dressed in her motorcycle riding outfit. Dark jeans and lace-up shin-high boots and her black leather jacket, her hair falling casually past her shoulders, her eyes concealed behind reflective aviators. She flicks the sunglasses up onto her forehead and inclines her head in greeting. "Hello, Artemis," she says coolly. "I was just catching up with an old friend." "Hi, Barsoom," Megan monotones glumly, and her bodyguard nods back.
"You!"
Artemis splutters, pointing between the two of them.
"Is there some kind of secret bodyguard society that I don't know about?"
"We've talked about pointing, Artemis," Dinah chides her, swatting her hand down. "And don't gape." Artemis shuts her mouth. "And don't shout in public. Yes, Barsoom and I have met several times." She glances over at Barsoom with a smile. 98 Bialyan Bowie Knife Show, wasn't it?"
"I believe it was the 2001 Balisong Show in Batangas,"
Barsoom replies, in a deep and tranquil voice.
"But I could be mistaken."
"Well, either way, there were some great knives in there somewhere," Dinah says with a grin, before turning back to Artemis, bracing her hands on her hips. "You want a ride, kiddo?"
"Don't call me kiddo,"
Artemis hisses, trying to keep out of earshot as Megan walks over to Barsoom and starts telling him about her day.
"What, do you think I was born yesterday? Why are you really here?"
Dinah opens her mouth, probably to lie some more, but is cut off when Megan pokes her head between the two of them meekly. Artemis glances over, and Megan gives her a half-hearted little wave goodbye.
"I have to go home," she says miserably.
She brightens infinitesimally, though, in an instant. "Do you think I could, maybe have your number?"
Artemis blinks away her suspicion of Dinah and forces on a smile, nodding as enthusiastically as she can manage, which is not very enthusiastically at all.
"Yeah, sure," she agrees. Megan types it into her phone with delight when Artemis tells it to her, and then she tells Artemis hers, and Artemis hopes Dinah was listening because she totally doesn't pay attention. And when she gets into the limo and Barsoom pulls out of the parking space and merges into the traffic of the busy street, she rolls down her window so she can wave goodbye to Artemis one more time.
"I think you just made a friend," Dinah comments, sounding proud.
"Don't change the subject,"
Artemis snarls, whirling on her and pointing an upside-down finger at her. She narrows her eyes.
"You seriously expect me to buy that you just happened to be here today? I told you and Ollie a million times. Try to bodyguard me and I will end you."
"It wasn't my idea," Dinah sighs, cutting Artemis off. Artemis sticks her lower jaw out and folds her arms, tapping her foot impatiently. Dinah rolls her eyes.
"When he went to the bathroom the other day, he... well, I don't really know why he did it. Overprotectiveness, I suppose. I told him not to."
"What did he do?" Artemis growls.
Dinah throws her hands in the air and mutters something that Artemis is 90% sure is of Latavan profanity.
"He took a look at your cell phone," she says rapidly, all in one breath. "And we both noticed that you had a number of vaguely threatening messages from an unknown party."
Something hot and white and unstoppable starts firing through Artemis's veins. Rage.
"He wanted me to keep an eye on you today," Dinah continues in a defeated tone, dropping one arm to her side. In case you were in danger from this anonymous..."
You think you can just paw through my private business?"
Artemis shrieks, her hands balling into fists so tight that she can feel her fingernails breaking the skin of her palms.
"What? Does every little scrap of normalcy in my life have to be on your radar? How..."
She spits out the words.
How dare you?
Dinah's face hardens. I understand that you don't appreciate us invading your privacy, she says stonily. But it's a necessary evil sometimes, Your Highness. And quite frankly, how do you know this person isn't a threat to your well-being? How do you know your identity isn't on the brink of being revealed to the public before we can do it properly? How do you... I don't, Dinah, okay? Artemis shouts, throwing her arms out. But would it kill you to just trust me? I've been getting these things for years. It's probably just some freak from my old school who wants to mess with me. I swear, it's nothing, and it's none of your business. It is our business, Artemis. Dinah snaps back. And this is the most heated Artemis has ever seen her. You are the last hope our country has of retaining its royal family. You are our responsibility. Don't you understand? We're not just here to teach you how to dance and tell you what side of the plate the salad fork goes on. We're here to prepare you. And when it comes down to things like this, we are here to protect you. Artemis's face starts to twist. Well, in case you hadn't noticed, if it hadn't been for the two of you and your stupid country, I wouldn't need protection or preparation or any of that crap. I can take care of myself, and if you don't mind, I'd like to at least try retaining a little bit of the luxuries provided by my old life. Like, say, freedom from interference. As her tirade had gone on, Dinah's face had gradually started to use some of its reprimanding frigidness. And now she's staring down at Artemis with this semi-shocked expression. Like Artemis has suddenly changed into a different person. I can handle myself, Artemis continues, still sort of yelling, enunciating every word for maximum comprehensibleness and vitriol. I can take care of myself. I can protect myself, and I know myself. And nobody has any right to decide what I want and what I need except me. That's how it's always been, and that's how it's always going to be. I don't care how many Belgravian hitmen try to amputate me into doing what they want, or how many UN jags think they can tell me what to do just because I'm a quarter their age, or how much you think you get to stick your nose wherever you want just because you psychobabbled me into starting these stupid lessons in the first place. So if you ever want to know if I might have a serial killer texting me at 3 a.m, ask me. That last explosive bit earns her a few skeptical stares, mostly from cheerleaders on their way to their dad's Lamborghinis. But when she dares to open her wrenched shut eyes and scowl, panting up at Dinah, she's taken aback to find that Dinah looks like she couldn't be prouder. All right, she says simply, cocking an eyebrow and surveying Artemis with a slow, acknowledging nod that may as well be a salute. That sounds fair. Artemis's glare dissolves, and she looses like a cat lowering its hackles. That's... She blinks, straightening. That's it? You make a very convincing argument, Dinah replies, chuckling, as any sovereign should. And, okay, Artemis can beat up Billy Hayes blindfolded, and score a date to homecoming with Wally West, and have a normal conversation with Cal Durham, and survive a year of friendship with Dick Grayson, and make Zatanna Zatara laugh, and get her mom to smile, and not get murdered by Connor Kent, and befriend a wealthy heiress just by crashing into her, but somehow, getting Dinah Lance to look at her like that... Like she's something to be proud of? Like she's grown? Like she's impressive? Like she's actually done something right? Might just be one of the biggest accomplishments she's ever had.